Hello, I'm Christine, and welcome to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News for the 14th of May, 2025. Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacon. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news. As a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD, simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition. Reading for you this week, we have myself, Christine, Angela, Ian, Helen, Mohammed, Mina, Simon, and of course not forgetting Roger. In this week's edition, we have all the latest from Beacon with Helen and Mohammed. From William the Conqueror to Jane Austen and a heroic tale from when Dudley Zoo first opened, there's plenty of fascinating nostalgia, latest news and information from the Black Country. There's all the reaction to the weekend's football action for Wolves and West Brom. You'll have to be sharp of mind as we have another quiz from Roger and Mina. We hear from Mina, who has the forecast for the week ahead. And we have the latest round of hints and tips from the gardening experts at MK Pulse magazine, who've got some gardening on a budget ideas for the months ahead. Local news to start though with me, Christine and Ian, but first, Angela.
Free mobility equipment, including scooters and wheelchairs, will be given to existing customers and military veterans as Wolverhampton's Shop Mobility service draws to a close. The service, which rents a range of equipment, has seen a significant drop in users since the COVID-19 pandemic, with an average of just 13 customers a week over the past few years. This fall in users means the service has become too costly to operate without significantly raising hire charges for customers. As a result, the City of Wolverhampton Council has taken the decision to close Shop Mobility and donate equipment including motorised scooters and wheelchairs, as well as manual wheelchairs, to existing users. Equipment will also be offered to military veterans via local charity, the Staffordshire Regiment Association, Wolverhampton. And any further items will be used by the Council's Adult Social Care Service. Existing Shop Mobility customers are also reassured that if they prefer not to receive the equipment, there are a number of other premises offering mobility aid for hire within the city centre. Before making the decision to close the service, the Council carried out an Equalities Impact Assessment, EIA, and consultation with users. Consumers said they use the service to access the city centre for shopping, banking or other appointments. The EIA found that by giving equipment to service users, they would still have the necessary mobility aids to continue to access the city centre, but they would not be confined to certain times or locations. At present, the Shop Mobility service only operates between 9:30 a.m. and 2:30 p.m, with the last hire no later than 1:30. Customers are only permitted to use the Shop Mobility motorised equipment within the city centre ring road. Giving equipment to users means they can continue to access the city centre via ring and ride or taxis and will have more choice about the times they visit and the locations they can travel to. If people would rather not receive the Shop Mobility equipment, they can use other private rental providers based in the city. These providers offer daily hire of equipment, low-cost repayment plans and or are part of national mobility schemes. Councillor Bupinder Gakal, Cabinet Member for Resident Services, said, "The decision to close Shop Mobility is not one that the Council has taken lightly, but taking it means that we can donate vital equipment to our residents. With increasing pressures on council budgets, we have to be realistic, and unfortunately, the service has not been well used for a number of years. This is despite our efforts to promote it via a number of methods, including direct contact with users and advertising to care homes and supported living organisations. Our other option was to significantly increase our fees and charges, but this would have a real impact on customers and be likely to further reduce the already low number of users. The Equalities Impact Assessment showed us that by offering the equipment to those who would benefit, people will have more flexibility in the times and places that they can use the wheelchairs and scooters. We hope this option will help residents to continue to enjoy their visits into Wolverhampton. Shop Mobility is set to close over a three-month period from last Wednesday, the 7th of May. During this time, arrangements will be made for users and veterans to be given equipment and information, and signposting to other provision will also be provided.
Clear pavements are essential for not only those using mobility aids, but for blind and partially sighted individuals too. However, most report parking on pavements as a regular problem which impacts their ability to get around. Drivers often mistakenly think they are doing the right thing by keeping the road clear, but fail to realise the consequences of their vehicle now blocking the footpath. The impact is that people with sight loss cannot see the obstruction until it is too late, colliding with the parked vehicle. As a driver, you can help by simply avoiding parking on the pavement where possible. And to help improve safety on streets across Stourbridge, Halesowen and Dudley, parking restrictions are to be introduced following reports to the council from residents. Dudley Council has published its list of new traffic regulation orders, TROs, for 2025-26. It has been drawn up in response to concerns raised by residents, wards, councillors and MPs. The concerns included parked vehicles causing visibility problems at junctions, safety issues for pedestrians, including around schools, and inconsiderate parking in residential areas. The work will see single or double yellow lines painted to restrict parking. Streets affected are Grange Lane, Pedmore Road, Shepherd's Brook Road, New Farm Road and Field Fair Road in Stourbridge, Wollaston Road, Stourbridge, Milking Bank and Shugborough Road, Dudley, Newfield Lane and Newfield Crescent, Halesowen, Ashenhurst Road and Geston Road, Russell's Hall, Dudley, Olive Lane, Halesowen, Mount Pleasant, Quarry Bank, Stratford Close and Aintree Way, Dudley. Changes to disabled parking bays are also planned for a number of streets, including School Drive, Amblecote, Scots Road, Turney Road and Rutland Place in Stourbridge, Gloucester Road in Netherton and Field Road in Dudley. Councillor Paul Bradley, Deputy Leader of the Council, said, "Residents and ward councillors are our eyes and ears in many cases, and as a listening council we have used their concerns and representations to identify the roads where work is needed. Work will start very soon and go on throughout the year. We are committed as a council to doing all we can to make our roads and streets safe, both for drivers and pedestrians."
Now, maintaining a clear, accessible pathway is also vital for visually impaired pedestrians to be able to navigate a safe route to markers such as bus stops, where the use of public transport is critical for independence and access to out-of-home activities. And Richard Parker, elected as regional mayor for the West Midlands exactly a year ago, is staking his reputation on bringing bus services up to scratch. But why does the West Midlands Mayor want to take over the buses? Here are his reasons. His ambitious bus plan was the cornerstone of his pitch to the electorate last year, and he is acutely aware that his hopes of re-election may well hinge on whether or not he can deliver. "We've got a system that works for no one currently," he says. "We've got a private sector monopoly running the bus network across the West Midlands, and that's costing us around an additional £50 million a year now, subsidising that private sector." Many will agree that there is room for improvement in the present bus service, but what are the changes he is proposing, and why does he think they will make services better? The first aspect of his decision is straightforward enough. Since the passing of the Transport Act 1985, buses in the West Midlands have largely been in the hands of the free market, with local authorities, most recently through the West Midlands Combined Authority, filling in the gaps by subsidising services that would not otherwise be viable. Mr. Parker believes that by bringing buses back under political control and taking charge of route maps, fares and timetables, he will be able to ensure that the service meets the needs of the public rather than being determined by what is profitable. However, he has stopped short of taking full control, as was the case from 1969 to 1986, when bus services were run by the former West Midlands Passenger Transport Executive, effectively a public sector transport operator. Instead, the combined authority will take ownership of the region's bus depots and fleets and lease them back to private companies who will be invited to bid for contracts. Mr. Parker believes that the upfront costs of investing in vehicles and depots represents a major barrier to smaller operators. By removing that obstacle, he hopes to create a more competitive market that will force companies to up their game and provide a better, more efficient service. At the moment, Walsall Bus Depot is the only one in the region which is under public ownership, and the combined authority will be seeking to purchase the remaining 10, including privately owned sites in Wolverhampton, West Bromwich and Pensnet Dudley. But the Transport for West Midlands, the combined authority's transport arm, insists it will not pay over the odds and is quite prepared to look at alternative sites if a deal cannot be struck. The first bus franchise service is expected to be launched at the end of 2027, with a number of contracts to be awarded in quick succession over the following months. Mr. Parker is due to face the electorate in May 2028. So he will be in no doubt about the stakes of getting it right.
Up next, we have the Beacon Update, brought to us by Mohammed.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Beacon Update. My name is Mohammed, and I've got the latest for you from across the charity. First up, wow, what a Sunday morning. A huge thank you and a massive well done to all of our amazing Colour Run participants. You brought the energy, the colour, and the smiles. Rainbows have nothing on you. Special shout outs to football star Che Dunkley for getting us off to a flying start. Martha Cummings from the City of Wolverhampton Council for her fantastic support. The brilliant Park Run team for keeping the pace. And the incredible St. John's Ambulance team for keeping everyone safe and sound. You all made the day unforgettable. Next, we're looking for amazing volunteer minibus drivers to join our team. Could you lend a hand by driving our minibus around the local community? You'd be supporting our members by picking them up and dropping them off for Beacon services and exciting days out. We'll also be there to offer a helping hand on and off the minibus. Some driving experience is preferred, and you will need a Category D1 on your driving license. If you're friendly, reliable, and want to make a real difference in the lives of people living with sight loss, we'd love to hear from you. Find out more and apply today. You can do this at beaconvision.org/work-or-volunteer-with-us. Or you can call us on 01902 880 111 or email people@beaconvision.org. And finally this week, mid-May is looking fantastic at Beacon Centre. We've got an exciting week filled with activities to enjoy the lovely spring weather within our community activities. We had swimming at Burt Williams on Tuesday, the 13th of May. Coming up, a spring meal at the Crown in Sedgley on Thursday, the 15th of May. Treat yourself to a delicious spring meal in a lovely setting. We'll be setting off from Beacon at 11:45 a.m. and back around 2:30 p.m. West Park Walk on Friday, the 16th of May. let's enjoy a breath of fresh air and a gentle walk in West Park, Wolverhampton. We'll be leaving Beacon at 10:30 a.m. and we'll be back by 2 p.m. That's it for this week's Beacon Update. Join me again next week where we'll have more from across Beacon.
Thanks for that update, Mohammed. Next up, we have another block of local news. And up first, we hear from Christine.
Patients in Black Country are in line to benefit from more than 180,000 more GP appointments each year, as over 1,000 NHS doctors' surgeries in England receive an upgrade to modernised practices. NHS patients in the Black Country are in line to benefit from more than 180,000 more GP appointments each year, as over 1,000 doctors' surgeries in England receive an upgrade to modernised practices. Backed by a government major cash injection of over £102 million, the surgeries will receive funding to create additional space to see more patients, boost productivity and improve patient care. It will include creating additional consulting rooms and installing lifts to unlock access to first floor spaces and increase appointment capacity without needing to expand the building. The money represents the biggest investment in GP facilities in 5 years and is part of a Plan for Change pledge by the government to invest £26 billion into the NHS and shift care out of the hospital and into the community. Health and Social Care Secretary Wes Streeting said, "It will be a long road, but this government is putting in the work to fix our NHS and make it fit for the future. These are simple fixes for our GP surgeries, but for too long they were left to ruin, allowing waiting lists to build and stopping doctors treating more patients. The extra investment and reform this government is making will transform our NHS so it can once again be there for you when you need it." A recent independent report from Lord Ara Darzi found outdated, inefficient buildings create barriers to delivering high-quality patient care and reduce staff productivity. He said, "My review found that the primary care estate is simply not fit for purpose, with many GP surgeries housed in inflexible, outdated buildings that cannot enable safe, high-quality care. This investment marks a crucial turning point in addressing this long-standing issue, helping create the modern, purpose-built primary care facilities that patients and staff deserve." Dr. Amanda Doyle, National Director for Primary Care and Community Services, said, "We know more needs to be done to improve patient access to general practice, and this investment in over 1,000 primary care premises will help to do this. Bringing GP premises up to a similar condition across England is important to improve patient experience of NHS services while making primary care a better working environment as we seek to retain and recruit more staff. It will also help to create additional space and extend the capacity of current premises as we improve access further and bring care closer to the communities where people live, as part of the 10-year health plan."
And in line with this announcement, Active Black Country and the local authorities of Dudley, Sandwell, Walsall and Wolverhampton also launched their Move Together campaign to inspire residents to embrace movement as part of their daily lives. Move Together is a unifying movement that seeks to break down the barriers to activity, empowering every resident, regardless of age, ability or background, to become more physically active. Paralympic legend Ellie Simmons, MBE, is fronting the campaign, which was launched at Manor Farm Community Association Centre in Walsall today, 7th of May. She was joined by representatives from the four local authorities, together with Wendy Morton, the Conservative MP for Aldridge Brown Hills, and a range of community partners. Commenting on her support for the campaign, Ellie said, "Being active has always been such an important part of my life. It hasn't just been for my physical health, but for my confidence, mental health, and happiness. The best thing is that you don't even have to be an athlete to feel the benefits, or have ever done sports. Whether it's a walk with friends, dancing in your living room, or joining a local group, moving and being active can make a massive difference. That's why I'm so proud to be here at Manor Farm Community Centre in Walsall today to support the Move Together campaign, because everyone deserves the chance to feel the joy and freedom that being active can bring. The campaign, running in three phases until October 2025, will raise awareness of the spaces and places where people can move and be active and showcase the wealth of accessible activity opportunities across the region. Every move counts. Together, in partnership with stakeholders, the campaign will reimagine the Black Country as a place where every step, stretch, and stride brings us closer to a healthier, more connected community. Sport England's Active Lives survey identifies the Black Country as the most inactive active partnership area within England. Latest data shows that 34.6% of adults were classed as inactive, a slight fall in inactivity rates over the last 12 months. The national average is 25.1%. Active Black Country's chief executive, Ian Carey, said, "It's fantastic to launch the Move Together campaign together today in partnership with the local authorities of Dudley, Sandwell, Walsall and Wolverhampton. Delivering a strategy to unite the Black Country and create active, healthier people and places requires a huge collective effort. Together with our strategic partners, we have developed an inspiring campaign that can motivate people from different backgrounds to move more and be physically active so they can enjoy the multiple health and well-being benefits that an active lifestyle provides. This campaign will showcase the breadth and diversity of activity opportunities on everyone's doorsteps and show just how accessible they are, empowering Black Country residents to embrace movement as part of their daily lives. Thanks to Sport England for their ongoing financial support. The Move Together campaign champions the Uniting the Movement strategy that aims to provide everyone in England, regardless of postcode, background, or bank balance, the opportunity to get active. The campaign is powered by a partnership between Active Black Country and the four local authorities, who are all working together with community partners to make active living more visible, inclusive, and accessible. Campaign activations in the months ahead will showcase the different ways people can get active in their communities. Wave 2 will focus on bringing to life the Black Country's waterways and how residents can utilise them for physical activity. Wave 3 will highlight the huge array of outdoor spaces across the region where people can move more and be active. To find out more about the Move Together campaign and how you can get involved, visit activeblackcountry.co.uk.
And helping to combat social isolation with a safe, calm and inclusive space, Catherine House Hospice will host a special memory cafe in partnership with Alzheimer's Society during Dementia Action Week, which runs from Monday the 19th of May to Sunday the 25th of May. The event will be held at Catherine House Hospice's Therapy and Wellbeing Centre in Stafford on Wednesday the 21st of May from 11am until 4pm. And is open to anyone wanting to learn more about dementia. The drop-in session will feature opportunities to talk with trusted experts and participate in fun activities, as well as giving people the chance to meet others who may be in the same position, including those with the illness and their loved ones. Representatives from community organisations, Health Watch Staffordshire and Staffordshire Together for Carers will also be at the event. Jordan Harris, Local Services Manager for South Staffordshire Alzheimer's Society, said, "Dementia Action Week is an annual campaign to raise awareness and encourage action to improve the lives of people with dementia. The campaign focuses on the importance of getting an early diagnosis and educating everyone on common dementia symptoms. Whether you have recently received a diagnosis, are a carer or a family member, we hope you will come to this event to get some helpful advice, support and signposting." Catherine House Hospice launched its monthly Memory Cafe at the start of the year and hopes that this specially extended event will boost awareness that the charity can help people with dementia from the first day of diagnosis. We have cared for more than 30,000 patients and their loved ones in the past 35 years, but many people still don't know that we can help with illnesses such as dementia or heart and respiratory failure. Nor do they realise our support is available for carers and family members too, commented Dave Fletcher, Director of Care at Catherine's House Hospice. Our Memory Cafe, in partnership with Alzheimer's Society, is a great way of supporting more people, many of whom might just need a cup of tea with a friendly face. Now it's time to test your knowledge, as we have the quiz questions for this edition brought to us by Mina.
Hello and welcome to this week's flashback quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, these are your questions. Here we go. Question 1. Which famous source originated in Birmingham? Question 2. How much of UK's jewellery is made in Brum? Question 3. Which is the UK's busiest theatre? Question 4. Who wrote The Lord of the Rings? Question 5. What famous train did Reverend Wilbert de Vere Audrey invent? And question 6. Where was the first ever Odeon built? I will be back with you later in the show with all your answers, but for now, best of luck!
Cheers for those questions, Mina. I'll get my mind working on them. Up now, however, is another block of local news.
A community group has welcomed Walsall Council's agreement to carry out an archaeological dig in Willenhall. Willenhall History Society, WHS, believes remains of the former Leveson's estate and the surrounding moat lie just beneath the surface on Moat Street. The Leveson family is one of the oldest families in Willenhall, who arrived as part of William the Conqueror's army in 1066. The Leveson home had gone by the turn of the 19th century, but the grounds and surrounding moat remained until the area was redeveloped in the late 1800s. Jumping to present today, Moat Street, Villiers Street, New Hall Street, Stafford Street and Temple Bar are all part of a huge regeneration project called the Willenhall Master Plan, which will see 107 homes delivered across the area. Outline planning permission was granted last year to demolish the remaining buildings across the site, most of them derelict and a hotspot for antisocial behaviour. One of the conditions as part of the planning permission is to undertake an archaeological investigation. WHS has welcomed the condition, which could see treasures and artefacts unearthed, but say they are holding their breath until the dig is actually carried out. Ralph Jackson, Vice Chair of WHS, said, "The thing is, in the 1800s, they had a tendency to just level the ground off and rebuild, which is partly what happened when they did the Morrison's site, when they found the old ruins of the school at the top of Doctor's Peace. We think when they built here, they just leveled off the ground and rebuilt. If they have, there's a possibility that the old foundations of Leveson Manor are still here under the ground, and we think it's at the back of this building. Willen Hall was mentioned in the Doomsday Book, which dates back to the 11th century. In recent history, a Bronze Age tool called a pal stave was discovered in nearby Gomer Street, indicating human activity. WHS says there are currently no known images or architectural records of the estate, although it is documented as having 10 hearths in the 1666 hearth tax return, making it the largest residential building in Willenhall at the time. WHS member Jacqueline Reed added, "Most people just assume that Willenhall started during the Industrial Revolution with locks. We want them to know we are much older than that. We are actually the oldest settlement in the area. I think it's important for people to know where we started and be proud of where we started. Our biggest fear is that we suddenly come here one day and the bulldozers are here and they've already gone down too deep. We would be devastated. It would be tragic, really, that we had lost that opportunity." Councillor Simran Chima for Willenhall South added, "This isn't an opportunity we will get again. This will instill pride in the younger generation for them to know the roots and foundations of Willenhall. We'd like the developer Keep Moat to showcase some of Willenhall's past, its history, heritage, and where it came from in the new development." Council spokesman said, "As part of the Willenhall framework plan, Moat Street and Villiers Street will be redeveloped in the first phase of the regeneration plans. Due to the historical importance of these sites, and as part of the planning consent, there is a condition to undertake an archaeological investigation. The council will work with Keep Moat to ensure this condition is satisfied. Local groups will be informed of any updates, including timescales, to ensure that the legacy of the Phase 1 site is maintained where possible. It is anticipated that the council will take possession of the site in May 2025, with survey works commencing shortly after."
From the 11th to the 19th century now, as a competition to transform Compton Care's headquarters with a creative mural has been launched. Compton Care has launched a competition to find the best artist to transform Compton Hall, the home of the charity for more than 40 years. Located in the west of Wolverhampton, Compton's figurehead building was built in 1845 and inspired by William Morris, a pioneer of the arts and crafts movement and exemplar of design at that time. The charity is inviting local artists and designers to create a winning mural design to go on an external wall that patients staying on the inpatient unit will look out onto. The brief is to provide an oasis of calm and relaxation for those who are using the facilities that also reflects the people of the city and surrounding areas and how the charity provides practical, physical, emotional and spiritual support to local people living with a life-limiting condition. The judging panel, headed up by Compton CEO Rachel Overfield, will select the design that matches the brief best and captures the spirit of Compton, which will then adorn the exterior of the building to inspire patients, their loved ones and visitors. Rachel Overfield said, "We are always trying to think of innovative ways to improve patients' experiences at Compton Care. We aim to provide the highest quality of care and support, so it's important that the surroundings reflect this. We hope the wall art installation will be a fabulously inspiring piece that reflects the support that we offer here at Compton." A spokesman for Compton Care said, "Compton Care is looking for imaginative and creative designs that reflect the tranquil and peaceful nature of the environment around Compton Hall. This could be in the form of artwork, graphics, graffiti, text, or a mixture of some or all of those elements. Compton Care is looking for entries that reflect and resonate with our communities that we serve." The artwork formats and dimensions are explained on the website, along with information about how to submit an entry at muralcompetition.com/events/Compton Care. The deadline for applications is 12 p.m. on June the 9th, with the winning entry being announced in July.
And staying in the 19th century, where Dudley Libraries are celebrating Jane Austen's 250th anniversary with four talks about the famous novelist and her links with the area. Delivered by Jack Barber from the Jane Austen Society, the events will take place at Stourbridge Library on Monday the 19th of May from 2 to 4 p.m, Dudley Library on Thursday, 10th of July from 7 to 9pm. Hale's Owen Library on Thursday, 4th of September from 10:30am to 12:30pm. And King's Winford Library on Monday, 15th of September from 11am to 1pm. Each session will cover Jane Austen's life, her visits to the Midlands, and the influence those visits may have had on her writing. We're delighted to be marking 250 years since Jane's birth with this series of talks, said Sharon Whitehouse, Dudley Library Manager. Jack Barber is a font of knowledge and experienced speaker on the subject of Jane Austen, and we look forward to hearing more about her association with our part of the country and how that fed into her work. Jane may have only lived until she was 41, but the impact of her novels, Sense and Sensibility, Pride and Prejudice, Northanger Abbey, Mansfield Park, Emma, and Persuasion is still immense. Talks are free to attend and booking is essential. To reserve a seat, please call Stourbridge Library on 01384 812 945, Dudley Library on 01384 815560, Hales Owen Library on 01384 812 983, and King's Winford Library on 01384 812 740. Up next, let's have another Beacon update.
If you need help with sight loss, then filter glasses might help you. Filter glasses are a range of glasses specially for sight loss, designed to protect your eyes from harmful UV rays and reduce glare and bright light, and also improve contrast as well. They make things clearer to see and your eyes more comfortable. They can either be worn on their own, or you can wear them over your existing prescription glasses. Wearing a sun hat or a baseball cap or a sun visor can also help too. So if you'd like to try the range of Cocoon filter glasses and find the right lens and frame to make life a bit more comfortable for you, then call Beacon Sight Loss Advisors for an appointment. You can call on 01902 880 111 and ask for a sight loss advisor.
Next up, we have another block of local news.
In a week where the West Midlands Police and Crime Commissioner launched a new initiative, Animal Welfare Volunteer Scheme, which aims to ensure the highest standards of care and welfare for the force's working animals, it was a round of applause for one police dog who retired after a long and successful career detaining suspects, finding drugs, and representing the West Midlands Police. West Midlands Police's PD, police dog, Archer, is putting up his paws and having a well-earned rest after 7 years of fighting crime in the West Midlands. The 8-year-old German Shepherd, who was born on St. Valentine's Day, graduated from the Force's dedicated dog training facility in Balsall Common in 2018, becoming an official member of the West Midlands Police K9 team. Over his illustrious career, Archer has made some important finds in the Force's investigations, including finding a set of car keys that were hidden in a forest, along with items from a car that was used in a fatal collision. Archer also has a long record of tracking down burglars and recovering firearms across the West Midlands. Last year, Archer and PC Henry represented the force at the National Police Dog Trials in Scotland, where they picked up the award for outstanding enthusiasm and greatest determination. They were also the winners at the West Midlands Regional Round. PC Mike Henry from the Dog Unit said, "I'm so proud to have worked alongside Archer. We have achieved so much as a team, and I am happy he gets to enjoy his retirement with me and my family. It's the perfect time for him to retire. He loves a water fight, playing with kids in the garden, and is partial to sunning himself on a lounger. We couldn't do this job without these courageous dogs. They are amazing at what they do, and I look forward to taking on new challenges with PD Axon. Archer will now spend his retirement with PC Henry and his family after the pair developed a strong bond working with each other. And as Archer puts his paws up, PC Henry will be joined by Archer's little brother Axel, who passed his initial course.
Now then, let's bee, haven't you? As South Staffordshire beekeepers are urging residents to participate in the No Mow May initiative to help protect local biodiversity and prevent a serious decline in pollinators. With one third of the food we eat reliant on pollination, the disappearance of bees could have far-reaching consequences for both our environment and food supply, according to the South Staffordshire and District Beekeepers Association. Chairwoman Wendy Woodward said taking part in the No Mow May campaign will help provide much-needed habitat and food for bees, butterflies and other essential pollinators at a time when they need it most. Launched by the charity Plant Life, No Mow May encourages individuals to leave their lawns uncut throughout May, allowing wildflowers and grasses to thrive. A simple step making a significant impact in supporting the future of pollinators and our food security. Impact of pollinator decline is felt far beyond the fields where bees buzz. Mrs. Woodward said, "The impact of pollinator decline is felt far beyond the fields where the bees buzz. Without pollinators, our crops, flowers, and much of our natural world would cease to exist. No Mow May offers a simple but powerful way for people to help reverse this worrying trend. A little extra time for your grass to grow can give bees the food they desperately need to survive and thrive. Leaving your lawn to grow for just a few weeks can give our local bees the boost they need by providing crucial early spring resources that are vital food sources. Each small action really does make a difference. No Mow May is an easy and effective way to make a lasting impact. Loss of habitat, climate change, and the use of pesticides like Roundup are all contributing to the decline of vital pollinators. South Staffordshire beekeepers also encourage residents to consider planting additional bee-friendly plants such as lavender, clover, and dandelions to further support local ecosystems. Residents can also find more information about the No Mow May campaign at plantlife.org.uk and more on beekeeping and bee conservation at southstaffsbeekeepers.com.
Staying with the theme of animals, and a quite terrifying but heroic tale from back when Dudley Zoo first opened, where a family is still trying to find a mystery girl who fell into a tiger enclosure at a zoo 88 years ago after unearthing a remarkable photograph from 1937. Mick Harvey, 63, found the black and white photo during a clear out when it fell from an old book which belonged to his mother. The chilling image captures a girl aged around 4 inside the den at Dudley Zoo, directly next to a cub and with a full-grown tiger just feet away from her. After making the discovery, Mick's mum, Constance Routh, told him the story behind the photo and how she had witnessed the terrifying incident. Constance was only 12 years old at the time and had visited the newly opened Dudley Zoo for a day out, having recently moved to Birmingham. The family had taken a picnic and decided to sit on a patch of grass to enjoy their lunch when they heard a commotion coming from the tiger enclosure. They suddenly noticed a youngster had tumbled down onto a concrete ledge and landed next to the beasts after squeezing through some railings. Constance's dad, Harry Routh, who had his camera out to take photos of the family picnic, was able to capture the dramatic events unfolding in the den. His picture shows the girl, who appears to be wearing a summer dress and clutching a doll, just inches away from a tiger cub while a huge adult looks on. According to Mick's mum, a group of men managed to bravely form a human chain and reach the little girl, pulling her to safety. Landscape gardener Mick tried to track down the unidentified girl after discovering the photograph 3 years ago, but without any joy. He is now appealing for anyone who knows who she is or anybody who remembers the incident to get in touch to try and help them solve the mystery. Mick of Leeds said, "There will be somebody carrying the story in their heads somewhere in the country. It was a miracle I even found out about it. We talk about it amongst family quite often. It's an amazing story. Somebody out there must know or have heard who that person was or is. It's quite possible she's still alive. Who knows? It would just be lovely to know what happened to her. There can't be many families out there that remember being told a story of the day their mother or grandmother fell down a cliff into a tiger den." Dudley Zoo is located within the grounds of Dudley Castle in the Black Country and opened to the public for the first time on May the 18th, 1937. It was around this time when Mick estimates his mother and her family went on their day trip there. Mick's mum, Constance, died in 2019, aged 94, but managed to tell her shocked son the fascinating story before her death. He now wants to find out more about what happened on that summer's day and trace the photo back to the people involved. He added, "I would just love the photo to be shown to the family who were involved or the family of the rescuers. The story belongs to that family and the men who rescued her. In those days, a zoo was a completely new thing, and a tiger would have been a ferocious man-eating monster to the rescuers. I would be selfish to keep it to myself, and it feels like I'm bringing this to life."
Up next, it's trivia time, brought to us by Flashback Roger and his Did You Know feature. Take it away, Roger.
Hello again, everyone. Well, this week will be quite a quick-fire list of interesting facts about Birmingham. Some we already know, I'm sure, but there'll be some that you didn't know, and some that'll serve as reminders too. So here goes. Now then, did you know that? Iconic brands like Bird Custard, Cadbury Chocolate, Bourneville Drinking Chocolate, HP Sauce and Typhoo Tea all started life in Birmingham, and Brum has the largest public library in Europe. It also has the youngest population in Europe, with almost 40% being made up of under 25s. The Jewellery Quarter produces 40% of all jewellery in the UK, the highest concentration in Europe. Birmingham is also the birthplace of the Balti and home to over 100 Balti houses. It also has the most Michelin star restaurants in the UK outside of London, and believe it or not, you can get to over 90% of the UK from Birmingham in under 4 hours. And Birmingham Museum and Art Gallery has the world's largest collection of pre-Raphaelite paintings. There are over 50 festivals across the city every year, and Birmingham Hippodrome is the UK's busiest theatre with over 520,000 visitors each year. Birmingham was also home to great scientists and inventors like Matthew Boulton, James Watt and William Murdoch, that they were leading Birmingham to be the first manufacturing town in the world. There was a point in time, actually it was in 1875, when three-quarters of all pens in the world had nibs made in Birmingham. And The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings are based on places and people in Moseley, where the author J.R.R. Tolkien lived. And Thomas the Tank Engine was invented in Birmingham by Wilbert Vere Audrey, who was Reverend at St. Nicholas Church in Kings Norton. And Pirie Bar was the home for the world's first ever Odeon cinema in 1930, when the word Odeon stands for Oscar Deutsch Entertains Our Nation. And Birmingham was the birthplace of heavy metal bands with the likes of Black Sabbath, Judas Priest, and lead singer of Led Zeppelin originating from the city. Also The Streets, UB40, Wizard, Laura Mavoula, and Duran Duran originated from Birmingham too. Well, who'd have thought it, eh? World famous names, inventions and places, all from just a few miles away. For all I can say is that Brum might boast all these things and more, but our Black Country has Aenach and Aeli, Dudley Zoo, the Lenny Henry, Teddy Grays, and Faggots and Pays. What more dare I proudly say? End road, I'm off. I'm going to get me a good pot of tofu and dunk a few ginger nuts for a change. Till next week then, I'll just say bye for now. Ta-ra a bit. Ta-ra.
Up now we have to hear what the weather has in store for us. Brought to us, come rain or shine, by our own Sunny Mina.
Hi everyone, it's Mina here with your forecast for the week ahead. I hope you all been enjoying the spells of sunshine that we have been experiencing right across the region. With the sunshine set to continue into next week too, the higher UV levels shall remain. So do take care and continue taking the necessary precautions, as the prolonged sunshine should see levels peak to high this week. The sunrise and sunset times are 5 a.m. for the sunrise and 9:05 p.m. for the sunset. As for the weather, it is looking rather glorious for both Friday 16th and the weekend of 17th and 18th of May, with unbroken sunshine continuing from dawn right through until dusk. Temperatures shall reach a high of 23 degrees. With a light northeasterly providing a pleasant, gentle and refreshing breeze. Moving into next week, and it's looking like things may just become a little more unsettled towards the end of the week, with plenty of sunshine forecast to continue right through the week from Monday 19th to Thursday 22nd. There is a chance of some light rain showers breaking through on Thursday afternoon. However, these are not looking like they shall set in for long and are likely to fizzle out rather quickly thanks to the spring sunshine. So it does look like we are set for a wonderful week of weather ahead, with a glorious gleam of sunshine right through the week. Do take care, have a wonderful week and enjoy the weather.
Now it's time to find out how our local football teams have been getting on.
Hi, this is Jamie, the Wolves fan. Just calling about Wolverhampton Wanderers 0, Brighton and Hove Albion 2. I felt that it was out of character. It was the poorest game since Vitor Pereira's been here. And I thought that we were basically on the beach. Yeah, that's it. Speak to you next week. Bye.
Now, here come the quiz
answers,
and they're brought to us by Mina.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Feeling confident? How will you score? Let's see. Question 1. Which famous sauce originated in Birmingham? And the answer? HP sauce. Question 2. How much of UK's jewellery is made in Brum? And the answer, 40%. Question 3. Which is the UK's busiest theatre? And the answer here is Birmingham Hippodrome. Question 4. Who wrote The Lord of the Rings? And the answer, J.R.R. Tolkien. Question 5. What famous train did Reverend Wilbert de Vere Audrey invent? And the answer, Thomas the Tank Engine. And finally, question 6. Where was the first ever Odeon built? And the answer, Perry Bar. Did you get them all right? If not, not to worry, as I will be back next week to test you all once again. Bye for now.
Weather sounds just perfect for a spot of gardening. And with temperatures and seedlings on the rise, now that we're into spring, let's head over to the experts at MK Pulse magazine for some handy hints and tips on what to do in the garden.
TNF soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, this is Jan with some seasonal tips and ideas from the gardening expert at the MK Pulse magazine. Go potty with your summer planting. We all know the importance of a glorious outside space, for us and for our embattled wildlife. But at a time when finances are being hammered left, right and centre, maintaining our gardens can put another terrific dent into the bank balance. To counteract that, we've got some gardening on a budget ideas for you this month, and actually the majority of these don't need to cost you anything at all, apart from time. Populating your space with plants, shrubs and flowers can be costly, but if you join a gardening group or connect with like-minded folks from your neighbourhood, seed shares and cutting swaps can ensure everyone has a garden rich in variety. What about planters to pop them in? The price points for those can be eye-watering, but with a little creativity, gardens can be spruced up and given their own truly unique twist. Are your wellies or walking boots looking woeful? Before you add to landfill issues, consider planting up those sold-out boots with seeds or young plants, which make for an attractive, quirky focal point. If the kids have boots that are ready for replacement, this is also a great way to inject new life into their footwear and cultivate their love of growing things. A win-win. What to do with old pots and pans? Fill with good multi-purpose compost and use them to plant herbs. They look fabulous and you'll never need to purchase your basil and mint from the supermarket again. Remember though, mint will grow and grow, so plant it separately and with plenty of space. That old chest of drawers you've earmarked for the refuse centre is another pretty way to cultivate a herb garden. You'll need to line the drawers, and you might like to use paint, non-toxic exterior paint, to add a splash of colour to your unit. For even less work, place large pots directly into the drawers instead of planting. Sturdy trailing plants and flowers, wave petunias being an excellent example, will look fab seated atop the units. Alternatively, remove the drawers and arrange them on top of one another at odd angles from the ground up. Remember, no matter what you are recycling, or should that be green cycling, you'll need to ensure adequate drainage. Once you let your creativity loose, the list of household items that can be reworked is endless. Tin cans can make for pops of cool colour that turn a bland wall into a feature with minimum effort. That cracked watering can, those chipped cups and saucers, faded and stained coffee mugs, and the old teapots and tired coffee makers that haven't been used since the Spice Girls were a thing, can all be given new life. Colanders can work brilliantly well too, and there's no need to add in drainage with those. Perhaps you can turn an old wood pile or broken unit earmarked for the tip into a cool bird feeding station, which will give you endless hours of free entertainment. Watching and getting to know your local bird life is one of life's little pleasures. The only limits here are your imagination and to make sure that everything you use is environmentally safe. If you don't have anything to repurpose, a trip to your local charity shops will reward you with fresh possibilities. You'll get to cheer your garden up for less, and the charity purse will be helped along the way. So, how does your garden grow? It's the most popular month for most of us gardeners, and one of the busiest, even though, as Shakespeare points out, rough winds to shake the darling buds of May. Weed through the flower and vegetable beds with a kitchen knife or pointed trowel to cut through the taproots of perennial weeds before they're covered over by the foliage of the border plants. I sow two rows of wallflowers on my allotment later in the month. They are biennials, and so when I transplant them into the front border of the house in October, they flower profusely throughout the winter. I sow foxgloves and honesty at the same time to be planted in the perennial border. Deadhead the spent tulips, leaving the stalks and leaves to die down, replenishing the bulb. We are earthing up the early potatoes, now the shoots are over 20 centimetres tall. The early sown lettuces in the greenhouse should be ready for harvesting, as are the first outdoor ones. Radishes, beetroots, carrots and parsnips, as well as peas and French beans may be sown early this month. Plant outdoor varieties of tomato plants with supporting canes. Plant them deeply and water them well. Choose a calm day if possible, as the leaves lose water very quickly at first. Sweet corn should be planted out in blocks or squares, as they are wind pollinated. It's a good time to push a layer of straw under strawberry leaves to keep the fruit off the soil. The lawn will have been mown by now, so after the third pass, either lower the setting of the blades to keep a trim lawn, or leave high if you are not averse to a few wildflowers in your lawn. Make the most of this marvellous month.
TNF Soundings.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!